Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Search with Kanda. I am your host, Jack Chambers Ward, and it's a very exciting episode this week. I'm talking with Matt Tutt, who was part of my SEO origin story. I'll go into that in a little bit when I have my interview with Matt. And I'm very excited to have a chat about something I really care about, something I know Matt is incredibly passionate about, and something I think a lot of people need to be thinking about more in our industry and the world in general. How to make websites and the web and the internet as a whole a greener, more eco-friendly space. And I think, like I said, a lot of people need to be thinking about this. There are some fantastic options. Matt and I go through a lot of really interesting topics, whether that's web hosting, whether that's how you're designing your websites, whether that's how you're actually using your CDNs and CMSs and things like that. There are so many different options to make your website consume less fuel and less resources and make the website and the web as a whole a more green and eco-friendly place. So stay tuned for that. But before that, let's have a word from our sponsors for this week. This week's sponsor is Optimizer, the PPC management software that is built for PPC people. Optimizer contains everything you need to create, optimize, and justify high-performing PPC campaigns. You'll never have to worry about security again. You'll never have to worry about setting up complex data sharing between apps or juggling multiple invoices. With their dashboard, you get a high-level overview of any ad account connected to Optimizer. You can quickly see key metrics, recommended actions, and how to set up the next campaign all in one place. The Rule Builder uses easy drag-and-drop conditions to automatically take action when you need them to. And this is a real experience from my previous role where we had an ad that ran throughout the holiday period when it shouldn't have been. And I think it spent nearly six times its recommended budget by accident. If I had an optimizer at that time, it would have paused the campaign automatically when it hit its budget and we would have saved a lot of trouble and a lot of money for our client. You also get automated alerts for things such as KPI metrics and budgets in general. Optimizer monitors what you specify and delivers alerts to you so you can intervene as needed. Optimizer also integrates with other apps such as Slack, Teams, and Zapier. So if you need to get alerts where you need them, you can do that by integrating Optimizer with those tools as well. The Optimizer team includes world-renowned experts such as CEO Fred Vallès, product evangelist Nava Hopkins, and of course, the PPC puppy, HK. Now, we've spoken about this topic on the podcast before, so you probably already know that ad platforms are pretty much driven by profit motive and benefit when you spend more, even if it's not in your best interest to do so, and it's on lower value traffic. Advertisers need to put their interests and those of their brands and clients first. So the idea of PPC insurance is taking out a policy, essentially by using software like Optimizer, that covers you when things go south. With everything you need for audits and reporting, Optimizer is the all-in-one PPC toolkit that makes managing paid search easier, faster, and less prone to error. To start your two-week free trial, click the link in the show notes or the video description down below, or go to optimizer.com. That's a two-week free trial by clicking the link in our show notes or in the video description down below if you're watching on YouTube. As we probably already know, search intent is at the core of everything we do as SEOs. Even if you're not directly working in content, understanding what your users are trying to achieve through their searches is still pretty important. I think we can all agree. On top of this, Google has told us that it takes up to 9 searches for users to complete their goals. This can be a pretty hard picture to capture, to be honest, with traditional keyword research tools. So what if you could get hold of up-to-the-minute questions that users have asked that have been clustered by intent by Google themselves? Well, that's exactly what Also Asked actually does. Also Asked mines and organizes Google's People Also Asked data in real time, showing you the next most likely question your searchers are going to ask. Best of all, it's completely free. You don't even need to create an account to try out Also Asked. Of course, if you do find it useful, there are paid options as well. We have the free, we have the light, and we have the pro options in terms of accounts that you can subscribe to. At the touch of a button from these accounts, you can download not only the questions people are asking, but also the answers Google has selected, the website URLs, and the titles that are ranking for those answers as well. Also Asked has the world's only API for People Also Asked data, meaning you can combine this data you're pulling from whatever questions you're asking directly into tools. You can combine it with things like ChatGPT to really supercharge your content briefs and transform the way you write content at scale. Go to alsoasked.com and check out this fantastic intent research tool today. My guest for this week is an independent SEO and PPC consultant with over 10 years of experience in the digital marketing industry. He is the creator of the SEO quiz, which is part of my SEO origin story, by the way, folks. We'll get into that in a minute. And has been published in the likes of Search Engine, Land, Majestic, and OnCrawl. Welcome to the show, Matt Tutt.
Thanks, Jack. That was really, I appreciate that. And I'm really curious now you said that about the SEO quiz. What happened?
I recorded a question for the SEO quiz. I just reached out to you randomly. You were like one of the first SEO people I followed on Twitter. And I reached out to you randomly. I was like, oh, yeah, I'd love to record a video. And I had literally just started doing the podcast. So nobody knew who the hell I was at all. And it was, and because I have a ADHD brain that remembers this kind of stuff, it was, did Andrew Optimizey legally change his name to Optimizey or something? Or like, what year did he change his name or something like that? And funny enough, that is, I then met Andrew in Brighton and I was like, oh, I was the guy that read the question about you in Matt Tutt's SEO quiz. And he was like, oh my God, oh, hello. And I've been friends with Andrew ever since. So, yeah.
That's really cool. I'm glad you remember it actually, because it's one of those things that it's surprising now where the years go, but it must be like, three years.
Yeah, I've been at Canda just coming up 3 years, so yeah, it was like literally my I may not even have been on the podcast yet. I'm not even sure, because I joined Canda like middle of 2021 and then actually started and fully like took over as host from Mark beginning of 2022. So it was a good few months in the middle there where literally no one had any idea who I was, let alone being on the podcast.
And I think that I remember like either hoping that you would get involved or knowing that I wanted to get you involved, because I'd heard you speak and I was really like impressed with your voice.
And I've been podcasting for a long time, so yeah, this is a practiced voice, to say this. I was a long time, I'm sure many of the listeners and viewers know, I was a podcaster long before I was an SEO and long before I was at Canda. So It's kind of my first love, my first professional love, I guess, even though I didn't get paid for it for 10 years.
And this is my first ever podcast appearance as well.
Well, there we go. Welcome. I'm glad I could be your first, and maybe this will be a nice little string and a new, like, you know, string to your bow, essentially, as part of your career. Anyway, we're talking about climate change and SEO, sustainable SEO, and basically how to make your websites greener and more sustainable, how to make the internet more greener and sustainable in the future. And I know that's going to be a very, like, rarely discussed topic, essentially. I feel like I don't think I've ever heard another podcast talk about this before. I know I've kind of like barely scratched the surface on this myself, but as we were talking about just before we started recording, I consider myself fairly climate conscious. I'm fairly kind of like, you know, try to be as eco positive as I can with my purchases, with my way of life, all this kind of stuff, as much as you can in a highly capitalist society that is the UK and all that kind of stuff. But I kind of want to start off with you, Matt. I intro'd you there, you know, 10 years of experience doing both SEO and PPC. Why was this the topic you wanted to bring to the podcast and kind of talk about?
Well, I suppose like, I've always been like yourself, interested in environmental topics. I kind of started out doing SEO in my bedroom like a lot of other people, and I decided to go to university to study something which was really just to get me out of the house. And I studied marine conservation, which is something which is kind of related to like, yeah, the environment and ecology and so on. And I soon realized that if I wanted to take that career further, I'd have to like commit to that for a long time, like a lot of years of study and going to a different university, because this was a foundation degree, which is like the lower level. And I basically felt that I couldn't really get a career at the time. And then I fell back into SEO, and there's a whole other story there. But I kind of always had this interest, and I always wanted to see if there's a way that I could like combine the two. And I knew it was going to be like a tough sell. I knew it wasn't like that simple. And if I'm honest, I kind of expected there to be a lot more pushback, or people coming out and saying, what's the point sort of thing, or what difference is it going to make at the end of the day? And not to say that I'm not disappointed, but I was just hoping that, or my aim is still to get more people like engaged and talking and thinking about the topic. I think it's okay to be to that, obviously, to have a website, to have a host which generates submissions and all of that side of it. But I think what's key is to actually be aware and conscious of the fact, and not to just like think that digital, when people talk about in the cloud, like your data is in the cloud storage, that is a bit of it's a bit of a shady thing, a bit of like a marketer trick, I suppose, because in the cloud, it's not literally in the cloud. There is a
Makes it sound
server.
part of nature, right? The clouds are all friendly and
Yeah,
part of nature.
we love clouds and that. Yeah, but there's actually like data centers that are powering that storage, and that requires electricity, and so there's going to be carbon emissions. There's going to be water usage as well, and it's just easy to forget all of that side of things, especially when you talk about websites as well. And a kind of interesting insight or observation I had was that as SEOs, our job is to typically to make websites get more traffic. And as a kind of direct result of that, we are actually increasing the emissions of the websites because we're bringing more people to the website. And for every person that comes to the site, the resources that are loaded on the site, they will create their own emissions and have their own power usage. So a kind of unwanted byproduct of us being like successful at our job is that we are creating these emissions. And if you're an e-commerce SEO, you're helping companies to sell more products. There's going to be a lot of like emissions involved in the shipping of the products and the manufacturing of the products, which I didn't really go into in the survey, but there's this whole kind of like chain of events really that you could think of if you wanted to. And I think I just wanted to help make sure that SEOs were aware that we potentially a part of the problem, which means potentially we could be part of the solution as well.
Yeah, I think that's a really important kind of point to drive, is that we're not going to suddenly be expecting everybody to shut down all of their websites and get have fewer visitors or whatever it is. Like, there is a way of building that awareness and us just being kind of conscious of it as we are creating, optimizing whatever we're doing as part of our jobs. And I know there was a big pushback. I'm glad you mentioned the kind of cloud thing, that phrase, like greenwashing, where companies make it seem like, yeah, we've got rid of all of our physical media and now it's all online, so everything's eco-friendly. Like, that's not how that works. That's actually, and I think there was, and it's me, I'm going to talk about the video game industry. There was a pushback from the video game industry a few years ago where it was the discussion of whether like discs and physical media are going to disappear entirely and we're just going to have, you know, the online stores on the various consoles and Steam and all that kind of stuff. And the actual discussion was like, first of all, is that cheaper for the consumer? Because you get physically less stuff. So is it cheaper to buy a digital version than it is to buy a physical version? And what are the costs, both financially and ecologically, to running these data centers, having these huge archives and servers that are, you know, video games are that'll be terabytes and terabytes of data before you know it. You get individual games that are hundreds of gigabytes. So there's these massive, massive files just building up and building up. And it actually kind of worked out. It was probably about the same as the physical side of things. And it was kind of sold with this very big, like, yeah, we're moving forward. It's a big push, it's a green push from the industry and all this kind of stuff. And I think we've seen a similar kind of conversation happen a couple of times, like you're saying, with discussing things like data centers and these massive tech companies. Obviously, we're an SEO podcast. We talk about Google all the time and companies like Microsoft and Apple and all this kind of stuff, where they're just dealing with indescribable amounts of data at any given moment. And just the sheer resources to run these data centers just boggles my mind sometimes, you know?
I was actually looking into that, and Google in 2021, data centers of Google consumed 4.3 billion gallons of water. So that is just water alone, which is
Just water, yeah.
16 billion liters in English metric conversion. And that is
But for those watching on YouTube, that's 16 billion of these. I have a 1 liter bottle here with me right now.
And that's just like the water side of it alone. And then obviously you've got all of the data as well. It's crazy when you look at it from that kind of perspective. And not to kind of change the conversation, but going back to the survey, my fear was that by telling people, oh, like you're using PNGs on your website, you should be using like WebP format, like and all of those like little tiny changes, improvements they could make. My fear was that I would kind of push it back onto the small business owner, onto the little person, and they would suddenly be fearful about the emissions of their tiny website that gets like 1,000 visits a month, and they wouldn't be able to sleep because of they're worried about we're going to breach the Paris Agreement 1.5 degree because of their website. And I really didn't want to like be like doom and gloom about it. I wanted to just try and spark the conversation and see where it went from there, and to hope that people who are working with like the bigger organizations, bigger brands, maybe it'd be more beneficial for them to start to take this seriously and to make sure that they are using that renewable energy and stuff as a web host and to make the changes that they make. But yeah, I think that looking at like systematic level, if you could get like the likes of Google or even like TikTok these days, if you could get them involved and caring about this topic, then you would make like huge impact to the actual emissions of the internet, as opposed to pushing onto to small business owners.
Yeah, because I think that is a real kind of difficult conversation, difficult part of the eco and sustainable energy conversation. Is so much of it is like, you need to recycle and you need to change your washing up liquid and use different detergents on your laundry and all this kind of stuff. Like, also ExxonMobil and BP spill 1 billion gallons of oil, and just like, oh, that's a literal drop in the ocean compared to the rest of the stuff that they're doing. It's like, I feel like kind of how much of this is making a difference. Like, am I a speck of a speck of a speck, and like, you know, indescribable small amount of change just me like, oh, I remember to recycle my cereal box compared to these enormous, you know, global conglomerates just polluting the world. But I think you're totally right. There is that. We still need to think about that and our impact as an industry. And hopefully that is then kind of having these kind of conversations. And I know you shared the video from, I think it was Michelle Barker, talking about the greener web and all that kind of stuff, and having that kind of like awareness in the industry. So we are all kind of hopefully pushing in the right direction. And it'll always be the uphill battle against the giant corporations and stuff. As much as we talk about Google, there's a whole other conversation about the oil and fuel companies and stuff like that. But even little things, I know in the survey, the kind of most common thing people address was green web hosting, right? And that's a big part of these data centers and understanding. I think a lot of people kind of just click the first thing of like, oh, what's the cheapest option? I'll go with whatever host is easiest and quickest and stuff like that. From your experience, what has that kind of like more conscious way of thinking of going for web hosting and going for the greener options?
Yeah, I think that, so I thought about this topic a lot, and I thought about like sustainability a lot in general. And something that I always come back to is that the idea of like mindfulness and just being like mindful about the decisions you make as a consumer. So you could take this every direction you want, but like clothes that you're buying secondhand, or you go into like fast fashion outlet where there's lots of like issues with buying through those. But when it comes to like things like web hosting, it's good to know that there are resources out there that are like really easy to use to actually find what's considered green web hosting. Because I was going down this route before, and you'd be surprised the number of sites who, or web hosts that like to participate in greenwashing. They'll say that they're like a green host, but actually what they are doing is like technically they're kind of offsetting the emissions. So they are still using what's termed as like dirty energy. And so they'll call themselves like a green host, and lots of their marketing will be around the fact that they are green supposedly, but they won't use renewable energy, so they won't be using like solar or wind or any kind of combination of renewables. They will just be using a bad, dirty energy source, and to offset they will like say, oh, we're going to plant trees, or we're going to invest in rainforest restoration schemes in like thousands of miles away from wherever you are. So it's kind of like you get this feel-good factor that you think that you're supporting like what is a good supposedly like a good green host, but actually you might not be. So one site that I found is the Green Web Foundation, and they do a lot of good stuff in this area, and they have like a tool, and you can, if you already have hosting, you can put in your website and it can detect and try and predict from the checks that it makes whether you are using a green host already. Or they have like a directory, which I think is still in beta, so they're still working out some stuff, but it's basically like a list of all countries around the world, and you can go down to like the UK, for example, and find a list of, I think there's like 70 or so in the UK, like different options for like certified renewable energy web hosts. And it's a bit of like a minefield out there, so you have to have some kind of trusted sources, and like I'd say the Green Web Foundation are like a really good resource for that. And like Crystal, as an example of a green host, Crystal with a K, they run on renewable energy as well. So I'd check those out.
Awesome. Yeah, I will put links for everything we're going to talk about for the next half an hour or so, listeners. I will put in the show notes so you can have all the resources there. I'll put a link to Matt's study. I'll put a link to all of the various hosting and stuff that we recommend, because I think it is almost that element. Like I joke all the time of like, everything we're going to talk about is going to be in the show notes and it's nice and easy. But just like, again, we're talking about that awareness step, right? And having that ability to just be like, oh, click on that thing, or rather than having to remember, oh, what was that thing that Matt recommended on the podcast the other day? Oh, I can't remember. Having that link down below, hopefully, will encourage the listeners and viewers out there to go and actually check this stuff out. Like, I know there's the website Carbon Calculator as well, and like the website carbon.com. I've used that a couple of times with a few of our clients and had that discussion with them. And like, hey, if you're doing this thing, like, oh, we're thinking about moving web hosting. I was like, well, are you now? Let's have a discussion about that. And thankfully, we have some very like eco-conscious clients here at Candor as well. We're having that kind of like, they're very open to that conversation, because you're totally right. You can often get that pushback from a lot of companies and a lot of people, whether it's in the industry or clients or friends and family, God forbid, where you have that conversation. It's like, oh, I mentioned, you know, sustainability to my uncle at Christmas and he's not happy about it. I think the little things you mentioned, like image loading there, for example, there's a lot of that stuff we can do. I know there's a lot of discussion around sort of like caching pages. Obviously, Google recently getting rid of their being able to search via the cache thing is a bit annoying, but that is definitely an element of it as well, right? Like thinking about that, you mentioned using WebP and like things, but basically reduce the load on the servers by reducing your image size, reducing image content, video content, all that kind of stuff. And I know, and I've talked about this, I'm totally guilty of this. I will often talk about having a more multimedia approach to content. So having a podcast version and a video version and a text version of your article. And I think there is huge value in that, but there are ways to do it where it's not just chucking a massive MP4 file and the biggest PNG you can find, so it's lovely and high resolution. There are easier ways to do that and ways to make it more sustainable. And, you know, usually we kind of talk about that when it comes to like page load speed, and we're thinking about like, oh, the page will load quicker if you have WebPs or smaller images or whatever. But there's a nice actual kind of like benefit alongside it as well, right?
Yeah, there is. And there's, I sometimes struggle with like where these kind of like recommendations come from. So obviously as SEOs, we can make this like clear distinction, like tie it back into site speed. By improving site speed, you get this like very minor SEO boost by making your site faster. And so that's one like concrete way that you could tie it back into to benefiting your client. But if you're talking specifically about like renewable energy, I wonder in like a bigger organization this is referring to, whether it would make sense to come from the SEO, like to push in that direction to the client, or whether that needs to come from like almost like an external person from your organization, outside the organization, like who's dealing in sustainability, or if they have some kind of sustainability department or resource within the company, if they're like that large, maybe that's where you could like get them sort of roped into it and to like to fight for the cause as well. Because like me personally, I work with small clients and like really small clients, and So I've not really had the opportunity to sort of push some of these things on them, but and it wouldn't make much impact at their level because it's like really, really small. But I wonder, would you be overstepping the mark basically if you as an SEO working with like a decent sized brand were to say to flag the fact that their site might not be running on like green energy? And I think there's like a way to do it in like a tactful way, which isn't just like accusing them of.
Like I said, I've had that conversation. I had that with a client mm-hmm. not too long ago where they were already discussing moving hosting, moving domain, and kind of that migration, early stages of discussing migration stuff. So I kind of opened the door to them like, oh, I have experience with this hosting. Canada has experience with this hosting. Have you thought about different options? Because, and this is definitely something we'll get onto a bit. Like, I think so many people kind of, especially if you're working with clients who aren't super switched on to SEO and you're really kind of guiding them through, or they're not particularly techie and don't know about the internet side of things, that is totally not their job. That is not a dig on you, clients. I know a few of our clients listen. That is not a dig on you at all. That is why you work with professional SEOs. That's why you bring us in for advice and stuff, right? And I think there's an element there of like just sticking with the usual stuff. Oh, I'll just stick with the big. I've heard of WordPress. We'll just go with WordPress. Oh, I've heard of GoDaddy. I'll just go with GoDaddy again. It doesn't matter. Whereas actually, like you said, doing the research, finding things like the Green Web Foundation, and actually being like, going and checking just a quick little calculator or a carbon emission checker or whatever it is, like, is it hosted by green energy? Is it an option? And is it like you said, if you're working with tiny clients, is it 5 or 10 times more expensive than the other version? Is it financially viable to then be able to go over to that and think about the green hosting side of things? I haven't had a decision from that client, but I floated the idea of them. And I think you're totally right. It can be a very difficult conversation. Thankfully, we have a very good rapport, thankfully. So there was it was a nice kind of like, haha, isn't this funny? Like, no, but this is a thing you can think about kind of. I am on the podcast pretty much how I am with clients, folks. So yeah, you get what you get with me. but yeah, I think that's a conversation we can be having even when coming around to sort of web design and stuff like that. That's also what we do here at Canda, like thinking about how actually the web design side of things and your building, like you said, having a way to make things load faster is all like, yay, it's positive for SEO and all that kind of thing. But that is reducing that pressure on those data centers. And even as we're trying to, as you said exactly at the beginning there, Matt, like we're all trying to get more visitors to our clients or to our own websites, right? And that is the goal at the end of the day, to drive whatever kind of conversions and KPIs you want. But there are ways to do that without... Like, I'm just thinking, I'm trying to do the maths in my brain of thinking like, oh, if you have this, you know, one site with 1,000 visitors and one site with 100,000 visitors, but one is, you know, for want of a better phrase, balanced ecologically, I mean, like, well, this has got green hosting. So actually this, what is the impact of 100,000 visitors on this site compared to 1,000 visitors on this site? And yeah, I'd love to kind of get real nerdy with the maths because that's my kind of thing. I have a physics degree, can you tell?
Yeah, you'll be great at doing the sums here to figure those out. I thought about this a lot as well, and I thought specifically as well, like after I did this climate change survey, I wondered what direction could I take it and like to make more of an impact, and because I was wary that people might take it as like a bit of something that they have to take on board as SEOs and that suddenly they have to start caring about it on their client sites. And I was thinking, how do you make more of an impact? And one of the considerations I have, and I'm still thinking of ways to do this, but WordPress, for example, powers, from my latest research, 40% of the web. So that's like a huge, huge number. So you would think, logically, how do you make WordPress, from the core WordPress, more kind of greener? Because with so many sites that are using WordPress these days, surely you think if you're able to make, I don't know, the themes, some of the themes more or less like intensive, plugins as well, and other kind of WordPress-based functions, if you could actually make that less intensive, then when people update to the next version of WordPress, then so much, it's going to reduce so much emissions just because of the fact that so many people are using WordPress these days. So I'm kind of like trying to push more towards the top level and trying to make that change at like a higher level, so then it comes down naturally, as opposed to saying to people, get rid of that bitmap. No one uses bitmaps anymore, but get rid of that PNG and switch to these other formats. And I feel like I've learned a lot in the process as well. Like the other day I was reading about SVG images, which is scalable vector graphics, and like I was a little bit mind blown about those, because PNGs and other image formats, they're based upon the pixels. So when you zoom into an image, you can make out all of the pixels, and that's how it's that the image is physically formed. But these are based on like mathematical equations where it's like plotted out, and so if you zoom right into the image, you will see the line and you won't see the distortion of the pixels, because it's like created like another way, basically. And so SVGs is like another like really web friendly like sustainable image format as well. And so I've learned lots of little tricks like that, but I'm just thinking, how do we kind of reach or put pressure perhaps on like the WordPress team, and even like I know that Wix are very active in the SEO community as well. Like, is there ways to put pressure on the CMS platforms, because then it takes the pressure off the small business owners to actually make that change? I think that green, well, using renewable energy as a web host, that to me is a bit of a no-brainer. It's like the surely one of the easiest changes you can make and the most impactful changes you can make, as opposed to like, yeah, obsessing too much over the minutiae details.
Yeah, I know there was a statistic you shared that was something like shaving a kilobyte off a loaded on 2 million different websites reduced like 2,500 kilograms per month of carbon emissions or something like that. It was an absolutely crazy stat. And like you said, when it's when you're thinking about something like WordPress that powers 40% of the web, a tiny little change from then cascades, and you create that, and usually snowball effect is used in a negative term. I'm using it in a positive term. It snowballs into like, oh, 1% of that. And you know, we talk about astronomical numbers on the podcast a lot. When you talk about, oh, it's 1% of Google's index, like, yeah, that's billions and billions and billions of things. The same is true for a company like WordPress, where they are such a big part of how the internet is structured these days, that just a small percentage change suddenly ends up being a much more significant change because of the numbers you're dealing with. And I think little things like that, just a small reduction that is then carried across millions and millions of websites across the world, then feels like a much more tangible thing to us, right?
Yeah, it's funny actually, because when I was researching this, that plugin, I think it was the developer's Danny Van Kooten, his name is, and yeah, it shaved off a single kilobyte, and it made that huge had a huge positive impact. When I was researching that, I couldn't actually find the source of that quote.
Oh,
interesting. And then I clicked, like every link I tried took me to his website, but it was to a 404 page on his website. And I was thinking, the SEO in me was going mad, because he's got all of these links from like so many like amazing sites, and they all reference this stat, but it all goes to a 404 page. So I was thinking to myself, well, it's kind of ironic, but I'm going to have to search his website, click on multiple pages to actually find that stat. And that's going to create emissions, more emissions and stuff. I emailed him and told him about it, and he said thanks, and he fixed it, he sorted it out. But it kind of goes to show that there's like so many ways that you could look at this sort of sustainability idea, and even the fact that you're clicking on a link and it takes you to a 404 error page, that is like one example of like wasted resources. And instead, when you're talking about like doing SEO for websites, even site architecture and structure of a website and like navigation menu, all of those things play a kind of a quite strong part, because if you're making it harder for people to find something that they're looking for, then you're increasing the pages and the resources that they're going to use on their path to taking that action or whatever. And so that itself is creating more emissions. So streamlining things and making it easier for people, which is kind of like UX, good UX, really.
Yeah, definitely.
So it overlaps into UX as well. And even look at it like site internal search results, how people are using like a search function on a website. If suddenly lots of people are looking for certain things, certain products perhaps, then maybe it's a sign that your navigation menu isn't quite up to scratch. Some products are not assigned to categories that they should be, or something along those lines. So yeah, there's lots of different like ways you could look at this topic, and they do fall under the bracket of SEO and UX and other stuff.
I think that's something I didn't realize until I started doing my little bits of research and having the conversation you and building up the show notes, is how much of this stuff already kind of crosses over with so much SEO best practice stuff. Like you were just saying there, like you need to make your information easy to access for your users. It's like, yeah, that's kind of the golden rule of SEO. Of like, if your users can't find the thing that they land on a page that doesn't answer the thing that they searched for, and then they then have to use an internal search or go through a navigation menu and try and find it or whatever it is. I know I talk about it all the time, but that, you know, internal links is such a powerful thing. Little things like breadcrumbs going to category pages or going to related products, so people aren't then searching and researching, not researching, but researching, searching again, and searching multiple times. Like you said, you're then landing on 404s, you're then going through redirect chains and all this kind of stuff. That's all adding up as an extra ping on the server, an extra little, you know, loading of another visit and another visit and all this kind of stuff. And obviously, probably as all the listeners and viewers know, that's all SEO best practice stuff anyway, right? We're always talking about the positives of internal links and clear navigation structures and not having 404s and piles of redirects and all this kind of stuff. But again, it's coming back around to that being conscious of the ecological side of things, that sustainable side of things, the greener thing of like, actually, no, that is making a positive impact as well. And maybe this is a step too far, but you could introduce that in the conversations with clients as well. Like I said, this client I've been working with is eco-focused. Essentially, they're working in an industry that is very conscious of a lot of that stuff. So adding that, not only is this beneficial for your SEO and this is going to help users find information on your site, but actually it is reducing the load on your servers and actually is, you know, reducing emissions and stuff like that. It's almost like this little sprinkling of, you know, sustainable sprinkles on top of the cupcake, or whatever. Like that's the sustainable frosting on top of the cake.
Yeah. It's like kill two birds with one stone, really. Like yeah. you can align a lot of things and please a lot of people at the same time. I was thinking, sorry, even before I did the survey, like thinking about the responsibility, like who this falls upon, like sustainability as a topic of like the website, like would it fall under like the web team, like marketing team, the SEO, the business owner? And I asked that question in the survey, and one of the answers I gave was like, is it everyone's responsibility? And I think that was the kind of like what other people chose, but I think what I was trying to say, if you look at like from the outside at a company that has like a really like bad website, like badly optimized, like really badly laid out, organized, lots of videos, lots of like JavaScript sliders, bad like green, not green web hosting and stuff. If you're on the outside as like a consumer or so who's aware of this, looking in, there's very little you can do about that, unless it's like a really big brand and you can make some kind of like song and a dance about it and to make some try and like do some kind of social thing to make people aware of it. There's not much you can do. But if you are the SEO who's working with the company, you're kind of like on the inner circle, and so you have this position of like maybe a small amount of power, not much, but you have like a voice and you can try and raise the fact that you're not ticking all of the boxes when it comes to sustainability. And yeah, so I kind of like saw it as an opportunity with the survey to try and make people aware that, especially people who might be working with these like really big brands. So I had a lot of help with this survey from Miriam from Moz, who does the Moz Top 10 newsletter, and she was really keen for it and was like really pushing me and stuff and really helpful, supportive. And she made a good point to me that I might be looking at it from the point of view of like somebody, a small, really small client who has like a few thousand visits per month. Whereas there'll be people who read Mars, Search Engine Land, and all of the other sites who they're doing SEO for like these huge brands that are like household names. So really, if I can get those types of people, especially involved in this topic, and get them on board and trying to help to change their mind, then yeah, I'd be really like pleased with that. I'll take that as a result.
Well, hopefully this is helping to spread the word, right? That's exactly what we're doing.
Yeah.
So you viewers and listeners out there, you can make a change with your brands and your clients. Because I know plenty of listeners, we do have enterprise clients and work on those household name, international, global brand kind of things. So yeah, hopefully this is essentially spreading the word and helping to raise that awareness, right? And now we can then kind of like open those conversations for a lot of people to kind of have those thoughts and think about it and be more conscious of it as they go forward. And I know there's been a big, especially when it comes to big sites, there's always this discussion around sort of like crawlability and indexability. We were just talking about 404s and redirect paths and navigation and all that kind of stuff. And I know a lot of that stuff comes down to, oh, you want to save the crawl budget. You want to talk about, you know, the elements of search engines coming in and crawling your site and stuff like that. Something I have been very interested in and something I, what's the phrase? Stupidly, probably, is the phrase I'm looking for, suggested that Google would start introducing a version of Index Now into their systems. Because I think, I know Jamie Indigo has talked about this. I know Cyrus Shepherd has talked about this. Quite a few people are talking about it, where getting indexed in and of itself is becoming more of a challenge as the like bar for quality is something Nate Matheson brought up on the show a few weeks ago. Like the bar of quality for your content is so much higher now that actually just getting indexed is now like the big challenge that a lot of SEOs will face in 2024. How do you think that the Index Now and that side of things can relate to a greener web and stuff like that? From my thinking, it helps reduce the load. Am I correct in that thinking?
Yeah, I think you'd be right there. I actually I read a piece from Patrick Stocks of Hrefs. He's very pro Index Now, and Hrefs made this like partnership with them that they now integrate that in their software, and it kind of like, it's sort of like a sitemap on steroids, maybe, in the sense that.
I can tell you're a marketer, Matt. That was a good tagline. I appreciate that.
Yeah, maybe it's not the greatest. but it sort of like avoids a lot of the unnecessary kind of needs for crawlers to like repeatedly come back and visit content. There was a piece recently I saw that good content gets crawled more regularly. And a lot of people were talking about that. They were surprised about that because I think John, I don't know if it's John Miller or someone at Google, like shared that kind of knowledge. I kind of thought that would be obvious, that good content would get crawled more often because they have to check that it's still there and it's still like good, like still.
If it's good, it's also likely to be up to date and relevant and change with the times and stuff like that as well, right? So that makes total sense.
But there's like a lot, if you think of Google, the job of Google as a crawler, it has to crawl every single, or like as much of the web as it can, all of the links that it finds. And you think of the resources that are required for that and the energy that gets needed into actually crawling them, let alone rendering them later on at like another stage. And so you think, is there a way to make it more efficient in terms of only returning to crawl when there has been like a meaningful update to the content? And I don't just mean like these people who will like falsify changing the last modified and tricking Google into thinking that's fresh content for the
ultimate
for
the guide push. To 2020. I mean 2024. Everything's fine. Yeah.
and so indexing now is seen as like a way of kind of avoiding the unnecessary crawling of the likes of Googlebot, and I see the benefits to it. I haven't played around with it much, to be honest. I need to look into it in more detail, but I see some big names like pushing it. What I found like kind of related, which was like super interesting, was Joost de Valk, I hope I'm saying his name right, of Yoast, the founder of Yoast. He's actually quite interested in this topic as well, the kind of environmental impact of websites. And I didn't actually know that until recently. And he tweeted recently about the amount of wasted, or the amount of noise, I suppose, the amount of bots out there that crawl websites kind of repeatedly, and loads of different types of bots. So it's not just Googlebot. The search engines, there's SEO tools, there's AI tools. There's so many crawlers out there on the web now. And if you think all of this is going on in the background, and you think of the resources that those are using up, that's incredibly wasteful. And so Joost was saying, why doesn't, and this is really controversial because he said this to the aimed at the SEO community, why don't we block all SEO bots? And he said he actually named Ahrefs, Majestic, which is that MJ12 bot, I think it's called, Semrush bot. So block all of these SEO bots to prevent them from coming to these websites, because he said, what is the value to the business, to the website owner? What value does a business owner get from having their website repeatedly crawled? So it's not just once, it's again and again and again, using up their resources, using up, we're talking about the web hosts and the data center, using up those resources. What is the value to them, ignoring people like us, and the fact that it would make our job a lot harder, but what is the value and the purpose for them? And a lot of people were up in arms and they weren't very happy about it, but I think it's a good point, really. And I sort of wondered, could there not be almost to keep the SEO community happy, as kind of a halfway point, but almost like a universal crawler, which is using green renewable energy, and it crawls all of these sites. It's allowed to crawl them, but it kind of licenses the data from the crawls to the likes of Majestic, Ahrefs, Semrush, any other tools that are out there. There's loads of SEO tools, and then they pay a fee to access the data. It would mean that all of the data is the same, and so you wouldn't have that thing where
I was going to say, yeah, they won't be happy about or
they
everybody
won't be
sharing the same
happy.
data set, but
Yeah, they and I know that I'm simplifying things, and I don't understand exactly how all of their software works, but just to think of the saved resources if that was to happen, as opposed to what Yoast had suggested, where WordPress, he was talking about getting WordPress core by default to block all of these other SEO tools and crawlers that aren't named, aren't trusted, so only allowing Googlebot, Bing, and other search engines as well.
yeah, I think that's a really interesting conversation because it specifically affects our industry and basically nobody else. Like I if you ask that to anyone on the street, like I always use my wife as an example because she knows I talk about it on the podcast and she's okay with it. And she's a nurse. She couldn't care less about SEO apart from what I occasionally waffle on about at the dinner table. But like there's that element where 99% of internet users would never notice that anything has changed, but that is an entire industry that is fundamentally changing. And like you said, multi-million-dollar corporations like Ahrefs, Semrush, all the different crawlers there. I'm not calling you out on purpose, you two. Just you happen to be the big names. But like, yeah, that would just fundamentally shift how much of this industry, like you said, it would make our jobs so much harder when it comes to, oh, I just want to quickly check on a competitor. Tap them into one of the tools and off we go, kind of thing. Having that, I love the optimism, Matt, of having that, like you said, that kind of central, the green crawler that everybody sources their data from. I like that idea a lot, and it would be a nice kind of if we could find that compromise and that middle ground where those companies aren't at each other's throats and trying to be like, well, we've got the best data. Actually, when you find that you've only got 10,000 keywords on tool A, we can find 15,000 keywords on tool B. Ha ha ha, we've got the best data. It's like, yeah, sure, whatever. Actually, leveling the playing field, I think would be really interesting. And again, this is big speculation, or I don't understand how these companies work either. I'm not claiming how to do that, but that would perhaps make them innovate in other ways, right? You know, they're not just competing on, like you said, who can get the most data at any given time. You then need to introduce new features, new things that maybe the developers would shift in different directions to do stuff they haven't even considered before. I don't know. This is, again, huge. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm speculating here.
Yeah, no, I think that would be an interesting point. And I think that they would have to go in different directions to provide value to SEOs, because, yeah, there wouldn't be those other differentials, I suppose, in the features that they had. And to be upfront, like, I've been without an SEO tool for a little while now. I wasn't subscribing to any particular one. Like, I went through a spread of trying out some different ones, but I felt sometimes really, really hampered by that. I really struggled to do what I was trying to do. Like, as you say, like, simple thing of, I get like a client inquiry and I just want to quickly see how the site is looking at the moment in terms of organic visibility. I want to see estimated organic traffic and I want to see the keywords that they're ranking for. And I can't do that unless I'm getting Search Console access, and that doesn't really happen until you've got this relationship with the client. So how can you do your proposals or any of that other side of it? And I've gone back to Ahrefs recently, and it's kind of like doing SEO with a blindfold on. It's a real struggle. And I don't know if you could argue it might make you better at SEO because you have to work in like a different way, but I'd really struggle if they weren't to provide the visibility. And but from a bigger picture, would you, if that would mean like SEOs were to like drop off slowly because the job became harder, but at the same time it improves, the web becomes greener as a result. I don't know, it's a tricky conversation. I do know that Cloudflare, they release stats on like a regular basis actually on the state of the web, how much of the traffic is bot traffic and how much is human. And last time I checked, it was like 30% of it is bot traffic, which is like a huge number. And I guess most of these bots, there's going to be a huge amount of like spam bots as well that are just like unknown, unidentified bots, like the ones that send spam to your mailing, your contact form and things. So yeah, it's a really big kind of question. But I was pleased to see that some, like I say, quite big names have started to talk about this from a different angle, perhaps. But yeah, I think that their heart is in the right place when they're making these suggestions.
Yeah, I think I know we talk a lot about the SEO community and the industry on this podcast, but I think we are all, enough of us hopefully are conscious and positive and moving in the right direction and open to having these conversations and being more aware of it and all that kind of stuff. I guess to kind of wrap us up, Matt, what would be the kind of takeaway going forward for how we want to think about this? We want to leave the listeners and viewers out there with the final kind of thoughts and stuff like that.
I think it would go back to what I said earlier, touched upon earlier, about being like mindful and like the actual practice of mindfulness. And I can't say that I'm perfect, but I just think that if you're conscious about the decisions you make in terms of like, even like on a personal level, like your mobile phone usage. When I was researching the survey, I found that like 70 kilograms, I think, CO2 is emitted when your phone is manufactured. 70 to 100 kilograms, and that's like a huge amount. If you can use your phone
that's a human's weight in carbon emissions. Like,
yeah.
And that's an entire adult person.
There's like billions of phones like in existence, and they just get manufactured like more and more. And so if you were to keep your phone for like a longer period of time, like I think 5 years or so was like suggested amount, which would reduce like overall emissions by like a huge amount. Take it further by like buying refurbished models. So I try and buy like refurbished phone or laptop or whatever, or like secondhand. And yeah, like just being conscious of the decisions you make. And even when that comes down to like choosing the web host you use, or I didn't really mention this, but even with websites, you could look at like a carbon low carbon design website. So do you need all of these videos on your website and the images and stuff? Like, can you cut them down a bit without losing like the impression that you're trying to make? So I would say that being conscious of these things, and just to be aware that potentially we are part of the problem, and therefore we can be part of a solution as well. And don't be afraid to like talk about this topic and raise it where you can, like, even if it's on social media, if you don't want to go like talking about it at conferences or whatever, but just speaking about it on social media and being aware of it, I think is all I'd say.
Yeah, I think that was kind of my thought for doing this podcast, right? Hopefully a lot of people who had not even thought about the, I think exactly as you said there, because we as humans are part of the problem, we can also be part of the solution, which is kind of sums up how I feel about climate change in general, even outside of web hosting and the wider human experience that we're going through in 2024. That kind of sums up my thoughts about it. So I think that's a really great way of thinking about it when it comes to the little bits and pieces, and then adding that up. Like you said, I know we have listeners who work on sites with millions and millions of pages, who are household names and in-house people who work in, you know, household brands and international brands and all that kind of stuff. So just being open to have that conversation, like you said, whether it's social media, conferences, all that kind of stuff, is, I think, is a really, hopefully, nudge and positive step in the right direction.
I hope so. And I'd like to say thanks for the opportunity to talk about this, because I know that from doing the research of my survey, that there's a lot of like brands out there that didn't really want to get involved in it and would rather not talk about it. So yeah, I appreciate that you've given me time today to talk about something which isn't the normal topic.
More than happy to talk about it, mate. Absolutely. I think that's, like I said, it's something we're conscious of here at Canda. It's something we are being aware of. Like, I know we use Cloudflare. We went through the process of looking at the greener hosting side of things and all that kind of stuff, because I know our directors are very conscious of that. Huge credit to them. Nothing to do with me. I take no credit for this. Credit to the directors and what Mark, John, and Jessica are doing, and how we're thinking about our web design and our clients and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, like, we're more than happy to spread the word and talk about it. And if people do want to follow you and discuss SEO or sustainable or green web hosting or greener internet stuff in general, where can they follow you, Matt?
I would say Twitter, but be wary that I post a lot of rubbish as well. It's not always, I have like multiple personalities sometimes. Sometimes it's just to amuse myself. So it's, hopefully no harm done there. Twitter and LinkedIn, I would say. Those are the main two ones that I'm active on, really.
Nice. I'll put links for those in the show notes as well, listeners. So if you're listening on the podcast services, they'll be in the show notes. If you're watching on YouTube, it'll be in the video description. So you can go and follow Matt, go and read the survey in full, go and read all the details, all the links for all the resources and various bits and pieces we've talked about will be there as well. So you can get it with as fewer clicks as possible, right? That's the whole goal. Well, thank you for joining me, Matt. It's been a real pleasure to actually sit down and have a conversation with you. Like I said, you've been a part of my SEO origin story, and it's nice to actually sit down and have a conversation with you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And yeah, thanks a lot for the chance as well.
And that wraps up this episode. Thank you so much for watching or listening, wherever you're watching or listening. If you didn't know already, you can watch us on YouTube. It's a full podcast episode in full video form. If you want to come and see Matt and I and our faces talking to each other about sustainable SEO and how you can make the web a greener place, you can come and do that on YouTube. All of these episodes from this season are on YouTube, and you can actually watch videos on Spotify as well if you want to come and watch the video on Spotify. Of course, it's an audio form everywhere else, so if you're watching us on video, you can go and check us out in audio form on whichever podcast platform you prefer. Coming up in the next few weeks, of course, I will have our monthly recap with Mark Williams-Cook at the end of the month. I have some fantastic other guests coming up as well. Lots of very interesting, diverse topics, everything from talking about branding and social media and SEO to more technical stuff and diving into some really interesting topics as well. So stay tuned for those over the next few weeks. And of course, I'll be back every single week, as you've probably come to expect if you're a long-term listener at this point. And until next week, thank you so much for listening and have a lovely week.